racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsports.
Hello, I'm Craig Revell.
I'm Colin Ford.
And I'm Peter Norton. Welcome to this week's episode of Inside Motorsport.
Could have not asked for any more motorsport last weekend. The Indianapolis 500 was sandwiched between the Monaco Formula 1 Grand Prix and the World 600. We start at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We go to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network's anchorman, Mike King.
Ryan Howard will display the white flag to Helio Castroneves here at Baker's. He steps up for the longest lap of his life.
You got it. The 1998 runner-up for Car Rookie of the Year has handled that lap driving beautifully. Helio Castroneves through one, through the short suit, into turn two.
Mark Donahue gave Roger Penske his first win in 1972. 29 years later, it's going to be a rookie to give him win number 11.
Talk about a welcome back for Chip Ganassi. How about a welcome back for Roger Penske? Poised to finish 1-2. Fans on their feet help take him home, Chris Denary.
It is going to be a Penske sweep. Castroneves' first to fair and his second for the final call. The voice of the 500, Mike King.
It's not a tour de force. It's a tour de Penske. Helio Castroneves leads the final 51 laps and wins the 85th Indianapolis 500-mile race. His teammate, Joe DeFerrin, is second. Michael Andretti is third.
Helio Castroneves did take the victory at the Indianapolis 500. On the rostrum, he spoke to Dr. Jerry Punch.
You know, obviously we were hoping for the best, but I think nobody expected this good. Obviously it was a tight race there at the end. I was really pushing hard to try to catch Helio, make a race out of it. Traffic almost helped me right at the end. I was just pushing a little bit too much behind him, so couldn't quite get a run on him, but I think you know, I want to congratulate him here on air, and it was a great race. I hope everybody enjoyed it.
He's a rookie. You were here in 95. Did you have any words of wisdom for Helio throughout the month of May?
None whatsoever.
Competitive nature in the Penske camp. Gilles DeFerrin finishes second.
Helio Castroneves completed a very slow victory lap as he finally pulls onto pit lane, where he will receive the adulation and applause of those who are awaiting him there at the victory platform. Helio Castroneves, the winner of the 85th Indianapolis 500-mile race. His teammate, Gilles DeFerrin, is second. What a day for Target Chip Ganassi Racing as they wind up fourth, fifth, and sixth with Vassers and Kara and Stewart filling out those positions respectively.
Michael Schumacher took out his fifth Monaco Grand Prix before the Indianapolis 500 got underway. Here's Jonathan Ledyard's report.
From start to finish, this Playboy's paradise was in total thrall to the fastest Ferrari in town. Once David Coulthard had been relegated to the back of the grid with yet another McLaren mechanical failure, and Hakkinen dropped out yet again, the world champion ran away to yet more sunshine glory around these Monaco streets he used to call home. Only Ayrton Senna has triumphed here more often than Schumacher and the original Mr. Monaco, Graham Hill, who won five times. It was Ferrari's second formation finish in 3 years, at the end of a week when both drivers had their contracts extended. Eddie Irvine's first podium place for Jaguar should silence the critics who seek to drive him out. Coulthard did at least uncork his bottle frustration by storming to fifth, but Schumacher's 12-point championship lead will be a sobering thought in the morning. Jenson Button was tied in seventh as only 10 cars lasted the distance.
Michael spoke about that victory after the race.
It's a very hard circuit. Although it was an easy drive, it is still hard to some degree because we do still reasonable fast lap times. I don't know what is so special. I certainly love that circuit. I have always found it easier to find my setup, which is very important again here, to throw around the corner, the car through the corners. But you have to be lucky to some degree as well.
Brenton Ramsey from the Formula Holden Association of Australia joins us on the line now. We're about to see the Formula Holden cars on the streets of Canberra, and a bit of shock news coming out early in this weekend that NRC won't be participating anymore.
Yes, that's right, Craig. Quite a shock revelation. That's come as quite a surprise to many people in Formula Holden that NRC have actually withdrawn both their cars from the rest of the season. And I think in the statement that I read from team owner Arthur Abrahams, he was citing some business concerns being the main reason, and also apologising to his driver, American Emerson Newton-John, in that statement as well. So hopefully, from his driver's point of view, I think they're trying to set Emerson up with another drive after Canberra, but it means for Canberra that both Emerson and Stuart McColl won't be running in NRC cars.
Well, one man who really went on in leaps and bounds after last year's Canberra race was, in fact, the victor, Christian Murchison. He really took that Canberra race by the bull by the horns and then ran with it and chasing Simon Wills, or pushing Simon Wills, I should say, right to the end of the Gold Star Championship.
Yeah, that's right. Christian Murchison is a guy who, I guess, this year has moved to the Hocking Motorsport cars in a bit of a last-minute deal. And let's hope that in Canberra he will have a strong result. And be able to also apply the pressure to this year. It looks like Rick Kelly, who is the main contender in the championship race now.
It is going to be an exciting weekend of racing. And, of course, Simon Wills, who won the last two rounds, has there been any talk of him jumping back into one of the Barana cars?
Well, not at this stage. I think what will happen is you'll see Rick Kelly running in the Holden Young Lions car, and Simon has basically done his two stints in the Formula Holden with Barana this year. So I think they will have a spare car at this stage going into Canberra, and then after that it'll be interesting to see what pans out.
It is going to be some interesting racing. We're looking forward to it right throughout next weekend, and look forward to speaking to you on both Sunday Morning Sport and Inside Motorsport next week.
Yeah, that would be my pleasure. And of course we've also got the local drivers Terry Clearahan and also Conta Paris making their runs in Formula Holden over the weekend, so no doubt the locals will be looking to follow their progress very well, and it'll be great fun to keep you up to date with everything that's happening.
Staying with open wheeler news, and we move to England, where in the British Formula 3 Championship, it was a weekend of mixed results for Australia's James Courtney. Courtney, racing for the Jaguar Racing Team in a Dallara Mugen, finished third in the first of two races at Croft last weekend, benefiting from mistakes and collisions by and between some of the front runners in the races in the early laps. This included a major clash between title contenders Takuma Sato and Derek Hayes that later saw Sato removed from the points for that race. The eventual race winner of Race 1 was Anthony Davidson in what was his maiden win in the British Formula 3 Championship. In Race 2, Courtney finished down in 9th place in what was a rain and accident shortened race. A slightly damp and slippery circuit with light rain saw a number of competitors make bad starts in the second race, which led to some hectic early laps. During the race, the rain eventually increased to a downpour, which on laps 14 led to second-place driver Jamie Spence launching his Duma Racing Dallara Mugen. With the race stopped just seconds later because of the worsening conditions, he kept his second place in the results. Takuma Sato was the eventual race winner. Looking at the British Formula 3 Championship, the championship placings they now stand, which sees Sato on 109 points leading from Hayes. Then in equal third place, there's Bruni, Prio and Davies, with Courtney sitting in sixth place.
Over in Cyprus, where hot conditions have met the drivers of the World Rally Championship, it's been a British battle between Burns and McRae. Greg Strange is at Cyprus and has this report.
England's Richard Burns will go into tomorrow's final day as leader, 3 seconds up on Scotland's Colin McRae, but he'd rather not. Leader means he's first to go out on each stage, and that means he'll encounter all the loose gravel on the stages. His tyres will sweep it aside, but that'll give McRae a clean run and a clear advantage. Conditions today took their toll. It was very, very hot, and though Burns and McRae led all day, they looked shattered as they arrived at final service after almost 10 hours in the heat, Burns appearing to admit he'd been outfoxed by McRae.
I don't know what to say, but of course it's a fight again with me and Colin, but tomorrow we know perfectly well that the road is going to clean, so at the moment I'm heading into tomorrow with a fair disadvantage.
Marcus Gronholm is third, some 18 seconds behind, but he could still challenge, as could Carlos Sainz, less than 25 seconds off the lead in fourth. Eight more stages tomorrow, and any of these four can win.
And continuing with World Rally News, Mitsubishi Rally Art team boss Andrew Cowan has confirmed that the team's first ever World Rally car is still on schedule for a debut at October's San Remo Rally. Mitsubishi is the only WRC manufacturer currently running a Group A car, but has finally committed itself to entering a World Rally car in the future, with the extra flexibility its design offers. Mitsubishi will introduce its WRC car in two stages, with the first step using current Lancer Evolution 6 running gear in the new Lancer CDS shell. So in addition, they're sort of moving over to a different edition of the Lancer. The second step car will be rallied for the first time at the 2002 Monte Carlo Rally. Tommy Mäkinen is currently hitting the WRC driver standings in the Group A Lancer, but this has not forced the team to have a rethink of when it will introduce the new car, despite concerns that teething problems could blunt Mäkinen's attack on the World Rally Championship.
Reigns of pain at Dover, and Tony would like to be. We're definitely gaining momentum. I don't know if we're on a roll yet.
All wet and talking NASCAR. I'm Mark Garrow.
PRN's Garage Pass, brought to you by Team Monte Carlo. Chevy, the car's more champions depend on. 11,987 patches of rubber.
And Team Monte Carlo captured Talladega.
481 checkered flags.
That's number 50 for Gordon.
17 manufacturers' championships. One team. Team Monte Carlo. The team with the winningest car in NASCAR Winston Cup history.
Woo! They're going to be tough to beat.
Monte Carlo. The cars more champions depend on. Chevy. We'll be there.
Ricky Craven, I guess when you hit that brake pedal, you've got to have a lot of faith in those brake pads.
You've got to be able to race with authority and know that everything underneath you is the very best. And with performance friction, it's never a question.
What about the brakes on your family car?
My wife says they're quieter. And if they're quieter, then it's peace of mind. And my children are more important to me than any one of those 15 race cars I have.
Performance friction, carbon metallic. Available at AutoZone.
NASCAR's Top 3 Series marched up here to Dover, Delaware, where Mother Nature decided to rain on their parade. The on-and-off heavy showers throughout Friday afternoon washed out qualifying for the Winston Cup Series and the Busch Grand National Circuit, prompting both races to have their starting grids set on points. That means Dale Jarrett will start on the pole for the MBNA Platinum 400, this after aggravating a rib injury during practice. That's why his car owner, Robert Yates, isn't wailing about all the wet stuff.
You know, he felt like it was good, I think, until he got within the car pushed on that same place. So they're adjusting on his seat. And so, probably be a good idea to rain for a while.
Jeff Gordon will share the front row with Rusty Wallace, Johnny Benson, and Ricky Rudd next in line. On the outside of row three is Tony Stewart, looking for his third consecutive win on the Monster Mile.
Can we do it again? Who knows? We learned a lot in the test. Did help us out a lot, so, and everybody says, why did you guys come up here and test when you won the last two races in a row here? And it's because we want to try to stay on top of this place. So, we just have to wait and see. You know, the weather's going to play a big role in this weekend, too, so we'll just sit back and wait and see what happens.
A trio of drivers have three-peated at Dover, David Pearson, Rusty Wallace, and Jeff Gordon. Now, missing the race without getting to fire a shot were Jeff Green, Kyle Petty, Rick Mast, Dave Marcus, and Lance Hooper. As for the Busch Grand National Series, Jeff Green and Kevin Harvick are going to make up row one. Greg Biffle will start third. He'll be without the services, though, of crew chief Randy Goss, who will attend his daughter's graduation in Michigan on Saturday. The Craftsman Truck Series will actually run before the BGN boys at 9 o'clock in the morning. Scott Riggs actually sped to the pole there, followed by Rick Crawford, Ricky Hendrick, Joe Ruttman, and Ted Musgrave. We'll do it again from Dover. Right after this.
Is your sex drive beginning to weaken? Would you like to find a way to solve your problems privately? Progenis is an all-natural breakthrough that boosts the male sex drive and restores sexual ability in men. Progenis is a safe and effective alternative to having surgery, using drugs, or implants to solve sexual dysfunction. The best part about using Progenis is the privacy. There are no doctors to meet with. Start experiencing the positive effects of Progenis today by calling now 1-888-895-1267. 1-888-895-1267.
Here at Dover, this is Kyle Petty, and you're listening to PRN's Garage Pass.
The issues.
Cars are too stiff when they have these massive impacts. All the energy goes to the driver.
I really think that the cars with the restrictor plates off would just simply be too fast.
The drivers.
Dale Jarrett, congratulations. Jeff Gordon, congratulations.
Kevin LePage, you drove the...
Congratulations, Elliot Sadler.
And you.
Is there any way you can incorporate some of the Busch regulations to the Winston Cup?
That's what you had in 2000 Daytona 500, which had to be the sorriest race I've ever seen.
It's Fast Talk, Monday night, here on the Performance Racing Network.
One driver who is in hot demand, even in the rain here at Dover, is Jeff Green. The defending Busch Series champ is back on top of the point standings, and rumors abound as to whether or not he'll land a full-time ride on the Cup side next year with Richard Childress.
I haven't really talked to Richard about it, and we're going to sit down and talk here in the next 2 or 3 days to see what he really's got on his mind. You know, I don't know what Richard's got available. I'm sure if there is something available, I'd probably be a candidate for it, but I'm sure there's other guys that's candidates too, so we'll just see what happens.
Finally, in Sunday's MBNA Platinum 400, Ken Schrader is going to make his 500th consecutive Winston Cup start. And that's it for now. I'm Mark Garrow.
PRN's Garage Pass, brought to you by Progenis, restoring sexual ability in men and performance friction. Virtually everyone in racing uses performance friction brakes.
And staying in America, we'll have a look at the Kart FedEx Championship, where rain has also interfered with practice for the Milwaukee Mile.
And as a result of the rained out practice, the grid will be determined by the point score in the championship at the moment. So running through the championship and the grid for tonight's race, starting off pole will be Kenny Brack, who has 49 championship points. Second is Helio Castroneves on 47. Third, Cristiano D'Amata on 40. Also on 40 points will be Paul Tracy, who starts off fourth position. Fifth, Jimmy Vassar, another driver on 40 points. I guess they're being allocated on an alphabetical basis. And in sixth, Jill DeFerrin. Seventh, Tony Kanaan. Eighth, Scott Dixon, who will be starting the race as high up as he's ever been. This year's hottest rookie for the championship. And in ninth position will be Christian Fittipaldi, down on 22 points. And down in 10th, Michael Andretti on 20 points, and of course starting 10th position. And of course, Kenny Brack found this to be a fairly bizarre way of getting pole position. And here's what he had to say.
Well, it's a little unusual, and we haven't got much running in, so it's going to be an interesting race. I think yesterday was good. We started off a little bit off the bat, but we got it dialed out and all dialed in, and we were okay. I don't think we're where we need to be yet, but I think tomorrow in the warm up we need to do some more adjustments. But it should be interesting. These races, when you have so little running, you can start up front, but if the car isn't handling, you're going to go backwards. And if you're starting in the middle of the pack and the car is good, you're going to go. Yeah, last year was a strange race for us. We qualified 16th, but due to our fuel strategy, we actually managed to get back up front in the end. But I wish this year we were more competitive on the track than we were last year. And if we can add a good fuel strategy to that, then we should be very, very well. We should be good.
And moving over to Le Mans news, Audi has announced that Italian sports car racer Christian Pescatori will replace the late Michele Alboreto in its Le Mans 24-hour lineup for the June 16-17 event. The Italian driver will share the cockpit of the number 2 Infineon Audi R8 with 1998 Le Mans winner Lawrence Aiello and Rinaldo Capello. Pescatori takes the place of his compatriot Alboreto, who was fatally injured while testing for Audi at Lausitzring, Germany in April. Pescatori is the reigning sports car racing World Cup champion after scoring 5 wins last year in the GMB GS Ferrari 333SP he shared with Frenchman David Terran. And as well, there's going to be some changes taking place with the Barber team, and they've got Japanese driver Hideki Matsuda in the Dick Barber Run Reynard for this year's Le Mans 24 Hours. The experienced Japanese driver will partner Didier Deradiguez and Sasha Marcin in their LMP 675 class machine, following Eric Vanderpool's defection to run with the Bentley team.
And interestingly enough, we here in Canberra might not be the only national capital that will have a street race in its in the very near future, Colin.
Well, that's right. Washington is currently considering the possibility of a street race over there for the American Le Mans Series. And the American Le Mans Series is in negotiation with Washington, D.C., with city officials to hold a sports car endurance race on a temporary racing circuit in the capital city of the United States. American Le Mans Series are working with National Grand Prix Holdings, which started on the project in 1999 and has a memorandum of understanding from the D.C. Sports and Entertainment Commission, their version of Canberra Tourism Events Corporation, to pursue a racing event for cities since June of 2000. So I can imagine that one. We're trying to think of all the various things that can go past in the Washington Monument, the White House and everything else. I reckon it'd be quite a good circuit.
Well, they have to be careful that a lot of the areas of the inner city, Washington, D.C., are very high crime areas. So they really will have to keep it limited to that mall area where the national monuments are. Otherwise, it could be a very dicey neighbourhood that they race through.
It could be another Brazilian Grand Prix type experience.
Yeah, let's hope not.
Talking about Grand Prix, the big news, Jaguar stealing Adrian Newey away from McLaren, and Dino Autosport magazine have named it Neweygate.
Well, that's right. Autosport magazine, they've announced that Formula One design ace Adrian Newey will be staying with the McLaren team until the end of 2005, despite Jaguar Racing Systems that it has a contract with Newey that will begin in August 2002. So the wrangling between the Jaguar and McLaren Formula One teams over who has the rights to use McLaren's technical with Adrian Newey's services from August next year has raised the possibility of a contracts recognition board for designers similar to the one already in place for drivers. And Minardi boss Paul Stoddart, he's bought into it with also a plea to the FIA after his technical director, Gustav Brunner, was poached by a Japanese car giant, Toyota. So everybody's trying to steal everybody away, and I reckon that one with Newey and Jaguar and McLaren should be interesting to watch, because I reckon old Bobby Rahal's been trying to get himself some good guys.
Well, if Adrian Newey is the guy behind McLaren's launch control, each of these toing and froing in the negotiations, the price will be getting cheaper.
But then again, Max Mosley, he's chipped in and said that the interesting point about the problems that the drivers and the teams are having with their new gizmos, as he describes them, is probably proving that people weren't cheating previously with traction control. As he's indicated, the fact that the launch control problems and traction control problems that people are having since they've reintroduced them is an indication that the teams weren't using them in the past, because the fact that everybody has had all these problems. As he said, last year they received many informal complaints from top teams that one or another top team were using an illegal system of launch control. We are told that the proof of such claims could be easily seen when supposedly illegal cars left the pit lane, as it was obvious the way that the wheel spun or didn't spin. Now the systems have been permitted, however evident, those suspicions were unfounded because so many teams are having difficulty making launch control systems work reliably. The fact that McLaren, Jordan, Honda and so on have been stuck stranded on the grid.
And also interesting this weekend is the first ever race meeting at the Rockingham Circuit, which of course the car FedEx Champ Car Series will be running at, failing at getting cancelled like other events of the car FedEx Champ Car Series.
Yes, of course you're referring to the track in the UK, which is the first event in the UK for the kart series. And you're right, let's hope that it runs a bit smoother than their race in Brazil and their race in Texas.
Rob Oberg is getting ready for the 34th Konica Winter Nationals up there at Willowbank Raceway next weekend. And of course, this one is the big one for drag racing fans right across Australia, with Willowbank certainly now the fastest track in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, that's certainly the case, Craig. We're well ahead of any previous year's pre-sales in both of those areas. And the interest is predominantly from interstate and overseas. They're the people that have bought all the advance purchase tickets, so it is obviously going to be a boomer.
Now, you're coming off the back of a 300-plus pass by Jim Reid last time the Top Fuelers were on the track. You also had Victor Bray winning his, what was it now, 10th championship for Top Door Slammer?
Yeah, six in a row for Victor, six out of six he's got.
And amazingly enough, he is actually going next weekend to try and get a triple crown all in one weekend. He's trying to get a national crown, which is held over from the rain that affected Calder, the Winter Nationals title, and just shoring up his national championship in just one run of the Willowbank course.
Yeah, that's right. He's in a position where he now has an unbeatable lead for that Australian Championship Series. The Nationals, he actually secured that the title at Easter. And now if he can win the Winter Nationals, he'll be the first Top Door Slammer driver in history to have won the Grand Slam of all three majors.
And in fact, a driver that used to drive for him is doing remarkably well, having a great run in the IHRA. Of course, Troy Critchley, who has gone out on his own this season.
Yeah, Troy's doing very well over in the USA in the IHRA series, as you say. He's built a great reputation as an engine builder, and now picked up one of the plum drives of the IHRA series.
And in fact, we'll be running eliminations tomorrow. From the sixth position, he qualified at, I think it was Englishtown.
Yes, yes, he's looking fairly strong, and it is very cutthroat over there in the Pro Mod class, that's for sure. There's 16 cars. Just to make it into the qualified field is a great achievement. And to be up in sixth, well, he's right in the thick of it.
Now, I spoke briefly about Top Fuel. Of course, we'll be all looking to see if 300 can be done again, not only by Jim Reid, but all the other competitors. You're probably looking at that last meeting, you were probably thinking Jim Reid was probably the last man you'd expect to run 300 plus, because his form hadn't been as good as some of the other runners in that division.
I think we're all of the opinion that it was going to come unexpectedly. Just when things worked right for somebody, it was going to happen when you weren't planning it. And as it turned out, that's what happened for Jim Reid. For the Konica Winter Nationals next weekend, I think what we're really looking for is the potential to see side by side 4-second passes at over 300 mile an hour, because Steve Reid in the Santos Cranes car, he is well and truly in form. So you put Steve Reid beside Jim Reid and you've got the potential for those big side-by-side numbers.
Now, when I spoke to Andrew Cowan earlier in the season after he was having such a great run in the United States, he was actually talking about being back in Australia for this event whilst he wasn't planning on running. He was planning on attending. Has that come through?
I'm not sure because their schedule has just been reinvigorated in the US, so to speak, in that K&N Filters, their major sponsor, has increased their funding so they can run some additional events in the USA. So I'm not sure now whether Andrew is still going to be able to attend the Konica Winter Nationals or whether he'll be working on his American program.
But that once again shows the depth of our Australian talent with the way they are now rubbing shoulders with the elite of world drag racing or American drag racing, which is seen as the pinnacle.
Oh, that's certainly the case. I mean, Andrew Cowan is very well placed in Top Fuel Eliminator in the US as a privateer. We've already spoken about Troy Critchley in Pro Modified in the IHRA circuit. And, of course, there's also Steve Harker in the Top Alcohol Funny Cars. He recently became the first non-North American to win a professional level NHRA race in what they call Federal Mogul Funny Car over there.
It's been a great result over the last couple of years for Australians, and unfortunately we just haven't got the south-eastern coast of Australia with with facilities able to accommodate these people.
Yes, well, I think that situation is changing in the very near future. The new Western Sydney drag strip is certainly going to come on stream. We're more than confident of that. We've got a number of representatives of the New South Wales Department of Sport coming up to Willowbank to have a look at the Konica Winter Nationals next weekend. Bob Jane is scheduling a season of drag racing at Calder and Adelaide Raceways for the coming summer. So we are very, very confident that we're going to be able to bring the sport up in the rest of the country, hopefully up to the level that we have here at Willowbank.
Mm. It has been a great year at Willowbank already this season, and of course, once again, Fox Sports being able to broadcast all the Willowbank action right across the country. That has been a huge boost for drag racing fans, particularly to see some top quality stuff each and every time it's been offered.
Yeah, that's right. What we do is we cover our major events here at Willowbank Raceway. For the Konica Winter Nationals, for example, we'll be doing three separate one-hour highlights packages, and they are shown free-to-air Queensland-wide on the Channel 7, on the 7 network, and then they also go to air nationally on Fox Sport, and I've got to say that Fox Sport have been giving us some very, very good time slots in response to the support the show's been getting.
Yeah, it has been very interesting to see how that has all progressed over the last 12 months for Willowbank Raceway, and of course it culminates this season with the Winter Nationals, and the numbers of cars that have entered for it, I believe, eclipses the Nationals from this year.
Oh yeah, certainly. Entries officially closed at midnight on Friday night, and when our staff left the office late Friday afternoon, we were at around 410 entries. But because in the modern age, of course, we accept entries electronically over the internet, and come Monday morning when we clear that facility, we believe the entries are going to be somewhere around 420 to 430. Now, 420, 430 competing teams, that represents about 3,500 races and crew. So it's a big crowd just even before you let the spectators in.
Yeah, and my favourite division in drag racing is, of course, Pro Stock. And from Queanbeyan, Bruce Leek will once again waving the flag for the Southern Tablelands region. And he had a pretty good run last time out at Willowbank Raceway.
Yeah, certainly. Bruce competed at the Triple M Australian Tin Top titles here, and we also ran the final of the Nationals, which had been delayed from the rain and wind out at Calder, and he ended up runner-up to Peter Ridgway in that. He has certainly been just been pipped by Peter Ridgway the last couple of events, but I've got an idea that Bruce is coming up here sort of pretty well loaded to get in amongst it. We've had a lot of testing here at Willowbank. Some of the Pro Stock teams, testing over the weekend before the Winter Nationals, and Jay Watson been running very well in the 7.8 second zone, but we know that Bruce Leek can run it down into the 760, so he is going to be one of the guys to watch.
And for race fans who can't make it up to Queensland next weekend, it is available online at www.willowbank-raceway.com.
Yeah, certainly, .com.au. We do have a very extensive internet site, right down to having a webcam, with a shot of the start line that refreshes every minute or so. And of course we will be having up-to-date results right across the weekend, so web fans can certainly keep an eye on what's going on via the internet.
Well, Rob, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you. I look forward to having a chat to you next Sunday night when we can talk about the winners and really go over the racing in depth.
Yeah, well, Craig, we're running on a Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. So hopefully by about 10 p.m. on Sunday night, we're going to have all of the results.
Well, Rob Oberg, we look forward to following the progress of the Winter Nationals, the Konica Winter Nationals, the 34th running of them up there at Willowbank Raceway next weekend. Thanks very much for your time this evening.
Thanks, Craig.
Well, last weekend, as we mentioned with Craig Denyer on the show, it was Cozzy Kalasidis who took the victory at Phillip Island. Cozzy, it was a nice return for you back up to the top step of the podium.
Yeah, it certainly was. We had a great weekend. It wasn't an easy race. The first race we had young Luke Yeldon making up for us, but on the last lap and pretty much last corner we got him on the start line.
It has been an interesting year for you. Of course, you've been developing that Satria.
Yeah, last year we sort of got the car up to speed, and with the suspension we've made some other changes over the summer break, and the car's obviously a lot quicker. I believe we've actually got the lap record now for Phillip Island, so we're quite happy.
And this year Pro Car has really lifted its whole package together and has seen that you've been able to run separately and then together on your own programs and really draw the crowd and have everyone right excited about production car racing.
Yeah, definitely. We sort of seem to be like kings of the castle at the moment. We've got the best of both worlds. We can go together with the Pro Car event with all the categories together. And then we've also got the only Class C, D and E race, again with the Konicas, on their support category. So we've got the best of both worlds, which is really great.
Now, I think your next run will be up there at Queensland Raceway.
Yeah, our next run is up at Lakeside, and the one after Lakeside is at Queensland Raceway. But we'll be at this stage competing at Queensland Raceway.
And, of course, with that you've also got to enjoy a week off now whilst all of the big boys, as it were, the Nations Cup and the GT performance cars run around the streets crashing and banging into the cement walls.
Yeah, definitely. We've got next week's a long weekend down here at Melbourne, of course, too, so I'll be enjoying it in a nice holiday house apartment, and we'll be watching it with some bit of fire, nice open fireplace going, so it'll be great to watch anyway.
Well, congratulations on last weekend, and we do wish you all the best as you head up to Lakeside for the next race.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Well, as I mentioned earlier in the show, it was shock news that NCR, Arthur Abrams' team, has decided to pull out of Formula Holden Racing. Joining us on the line is their media manager, Paul Marinelli. And Paul, it did seem as a bit of a shock that Arthur had decided to sell the team, which has now meant it's pulling out of Formula Holden.
Well, I should say, hi Craig, how you doing? And first of all, NRC has not sold the team as such. They've simply sold their Formula Holden hardware. That's three Reynard 95D Formula Holden chassis, all the spare parts, engines and ongoing technical support to an American consortium of drivers who are competing in a new series they're developing over there. It was an opportunity, a business opportunity presented to Arthur, and I think he was put in a position where it was it's here or the deal's off. And judging by the way the category has gone so far this season, not so much the category, but even just the NRC team in terms of the Formula Holden division of the team, which, of course, as you know, has got the V8 supercar as well, was not self-sufficient. And it barely needs to be that in order to be able to continue, because it is a division of a company that reports to directors, and that is NRC International, which is the parent company of the team. Now, that wasn't happening, so it was a situation where Arthur had to make a decision, and that's what he's decided to do. The whole shame of it, though, is the timing of it, really.
Yeah, it's right before the GMC 400, and I guess the question I have to ask is, Emerson Newton-John and Matthew Halliday, I think, were the two drivers? No, it wasn't.
Newton-John and Stuart McCall.
Stuart McCall. How are they positioned?
Well, we're currently negotiating to place Emerson Newton-John with another team.
That's still underway. It hasn't been confirmed yet, but I think everyone will be very happy with the news when it is released on Tuesday as to who Emerson will finish the season off with. We're doing all we can to place him in a position, a very competitive position in Formula Holden to finish off his season. And as we've issued in our statement, Arthur and all of us in NRC, we really need to apologise publicly to Emerson for this huge disruption to his season. He will miss Canberra as a consequence of it, though. I think it's just too close to have done anything just for Canberra. But the last four races of the season, you'll see him fighting hard with another team, and that's what we're working on finalising at the moment. In Stuart McColl's case, he's done a great job all season, but his deal was always a race-by-race deal, and I must say that that's come from him rather than from the team. And the team received no confirmation that he would be continuing. His management was asked several times as to whether or not they're willing to go to Canberra and do Canberra, and there was no forthright answer from that. And so, as far as the team's concerned, they have no obligation to place him with another team. Obviously, we'll do all we can to help, but our arrangement with him was not a full-time arrangement for the season.
Mm. But the good news for Canberra supporters of motorsport is that Dale Breed is not affected by this arrangement.
No, he's not affected at all by this arrangement, and last I heard was that he is negotiating to actually appear in the Formula Holden races up there, which is good. Apparently he's making a cameo appearance with one of the teams. I think it's a great idea, and Canberra will have their own runner, and as you know, he's been doing a great job in the Konica V8 supercar for us, and we think he's got more to develop as the season progresses.
Yeah, it has been an interesting year for him. He's certainly been extremely quick at a lot of the tracks that he's gone to already.
He has, Craig. I mean, at Phillip Island, we were the second fastest outright. We set the second fastest outright lap in our VT to two Simon Wills. It was like 0.3 seconds difference. So I think it's a matter of Dale getting very used to the racing of these cars. And remember, it's only been four rounds down now. And he's learned so much in such a short time that I think you'll find the last couple of rounds and Bathurst, he will be a guy to watch. He's as quick as anybody else out there. It's just a matter of getting used to how to race these cars, how to get the best advantage out of the tyres. There's so many different variables. And look at the Konica series this year, just how competitive it is. It's incredible.
Well, you are really fighting it out with Simon Wills as the genuine privateers in a series that is supposed to be a privateer series.
Well, that's it. I mean, the teams we're competing against, and really, you can't argue with the fact that we are the fastest non-level one supported team out there. There is no doubt about that. People can tell you they don't get support, but they do get support. They turn up at the tracks. They have everything they need. They're basically miles ahead of us and everyone else in terms of setup before they even get there. We have to work from all day Saturday or half the day Saturday to try and get somewhere near where these guys were at on the week before they got to the circuit, if you know what I mean, in terms of data and so forth. But NRC has some great engineers on board, and Dale's an excellent driver in terms of feedback, and while his experience level in V8 isn't that high, he's certainly learning to make the car go quick in a very short time.
Well, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, Paul. We look forward to speaking to you, as I know Dale will be heading up to Lakeside fairly soon, and no doubt you'll be dropping into Canberra to have a bit of a look at what's going on here.
Well, it's a great event, the GMC 400. I know it's going to be fantastic. And I think the important thing to note here is that there's been a lot of slanging about Formula Holden and stuff of recent times, and I think it needs to be said that Formula Holden's done an incredible job over the last 12 years in terms of sending drivers on to the rest of their careers. Their track record speaks for itself, and NRC's decision is in no way a reflection of, say, not believing in the series anymore. It's not like that. It's a business opportunity, a very good business opportunity, I might add. And, you know, when it comes to making decisions like that, sometimes you don't have time to really sit down and say, well, hey, let's stick to it just for the sake of it, when an opportunity presents itself like that. NRC has made it very clear that they intend to go V8 supercar racing, that the broader picture is to go to the Shell series eventually, and you can't do that while you're carrying, you know, $600,000 worth of Formula Holden hardware as well. You know, eventually something has to give. And that's really what's led to this decision. Nothing more, nothing less. There's nothing wrong with Formula Holden.
And I would imagine that Arthur would be available to, in the future, go back to Formula Holden at some stage if funding allowed.
Well, not only that, but even Formula 3, even anything really. I mean, the team has got the expertise to be able to compete in any different category, but whether it would be Formula Holden or Formula 3 or something like that. We do dearly want to hold on to some sort of open wheeler involvement, because that really, it is important that Australia does have a continued strong open wheeler feeder category, moving the drivers through. Because you've got Formula Ford and that's excellent, but you need something else too with a bit more power. You can't just throw a guy straight into a V8 supercar. It has worked in Garth Tander's case and in a couple of other guys' cases, but it is more the exception rather than the rule. So, yeah, the team would obviously look at anything like that in the future.
Well, Paul, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you and look forward to having a chat with you whilst you're in Canberra next week.
Thank you, Craig.
Hi, I'm Nice Rock Nick. We went out onto the streets to find out what you thought of the Wednesday wash-up.
I don't know what it is.
What's that?
I don't know what it is.
Don't know it.
I don't know. I've never heard it.
It's great. I love it.
So why don't you get into the know about all the sporting dopes and anecdotes and tune in to 103.9 Triple S FM on Wednesday night at 11 o'clock and see what all the fuss is about.
Triple S comes to you with the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
All the interest at the GNC 400 is going to be focused on the Nations Cup. And, of course, this week the parity details have been released. And, Chris Nixon, it has been an interesting week for you all at Procar with, of course, this major event coming up. And on the heels of such success that you enjoyed at Phillip Island and Wakefield Park, it's just going to roll on to an even bigger and better GTP season.
Good evening, Craig. I think it's going to be pretty exciting at the GMC 400 for the third round of the Mega Mantis Australian Nations Cup Championship. We're talking this time about parity adjustments, which don't get a lot of publicity, but people ought to be aware that in Nations Cup in particular, there are parity adjustments because there are no classes or anything else for the drivers to compete for except the outright championship. So having such a diversity of cars, we have the Porsche GT3, we have the Lamborghini Diablo SBR, and later in the season again the GTR, we have the Ferrari 360 Challenge, the new supercharged Jaguar XKR, the Brabham Honda NSX supercharged, the Toyota Supra, quite a variety of cars, the Nissan GTR R33. So in order to give everybody a fighting chance of winning races, and of course I failed to mention the Viper, there is a parity system in existence, and there is a parity committee that makes recommendations to CAMS. It's up to CAMS ultimately to authorise these changes. They're allowed to do several in each season, and on the results and performances of the first two rounds of the championship, they've made some quite significant changes for round three.
It is also going to be interesting to see just how everyone settles down on the streets, because you cannot make mistakes, and as Paul Stokoe found out last year, it doesn't take a lot to knock quite big pieces out of your Lamborghini Diablo.
Well, you're absolutely right. Paul did do that. I think I seem to recall he knocked the front spoiler off in a little coming together with somebody, and he said to me last week that that really was the moment when he felt that he saw the 2000 championship slip from his reach. Went on to be won by Jim Richards, who was one of the three Porsche winners at Canberra that day, along with Peter Fitzgerald and Mark Williamson. So the parity adjustments for Canberra will see a smaller air restrictor going on to the Lamborghini Diablo, or two air restrictors of 60 millimetres instead of the two 70 millimetre air restrictors that they have run this season until now. The idea being, obviously, to try to pull back that big V12 a little bit and bring it back to the Porsches and the Ferraris and the others. The Ferrari also has had its air restrictor, it has a single air restrictor, reduced in diameter from 85 millimetres to 75 millimetres. So there are two cars that are going to lose a little bit of performance coming into the Canberra round. At the same time, it's the first reappearance for the season of the Dodge Viper ACRs, which have been upgraded in the case of Darcy Russell, Rusty French and Jeff Morgan, to GTSR Le Mans style bodywork, 6-speed sequential Hollinger gearboxes, slightly more powerful brakes from either Brembo or Harrop, and a little bit of weight out of them. So we're looking at the Vipers having a fighting chance. And one of last year's Canberra winners, Mark Williamson, no longer has a Porsche, but he's having his first race in his Lotus Elise 200R, which is a competition enclosed version of the Lotus Elise road car. Only a 1.8 litre engine with about 130 kilowatts, but the thing only weighs about 650 kilos, so around Canberra it actually might be a handy thing, Craig.
I think it's going to be a very interesting car to see out there, because very short wheelbase, which is going to make it slightly different to the Porsche, Ferraris and Lamborghini, which are very long wheelbase cars.
It's an extremely nimble and light car, and of course, Canberra being as narrow as it is, that's probably what you want. It's got great brakes, it's got competition suspension, so it's fully adjustable, unlike some of the other cars in the Nations Cup, which rely on production suspension or road car type suspension. So it might be one where it's going to shine. He certainly isn't going to shine at Queensland Raceway in July, which has got some pretty long straights on it, where the little 1.8 Lotus won't see where the 5.7 litre and the 8 litre Vipers went.
No, that's right. And also, we must also take a moment to have a look at what has been a very competitive GT performance category this year. The new title and the whole package that they've been putting on. We saw at Wakefield Park just some fantastic racing, and it really did change right over the day with how all those cars lined up at each and every turn.
First two rounds of this series have been brilliant, Craig. At the Clipsal 500, I thought the racing and GT performance was fantastic, and again at Wakefield Park. We are going to see the second outing for the new prancing horse Mustang Cobra. The driver, which is... not yet known. Not known whether it's going to be its regular driver, John Bauer, who also will have duties for Cat Racing next weekend, or whether it's going to be his fellow prancing horse driver, Mark Noski. My betting is that it will be Noski, who will share his duties between the Mustang and the Ferrari. It'd be a nice day's work if you can get it, wouldn't it?
It would indeed, but unfortunately with the distance that has to be covered by the drivers who would be in the supercar pit and then to get over to where the production cars are going to be pitted, it just does make it quite a bit too hectic probably to be able to juggle both.
Indeed, Craig, and I think if it were Mark driving the Mustang, he'll acquit himself very well. Probably not the best car to be able to have to race around Canberra, but... it's a fabulous piece of machinery. It really has been superbly built. It sounds magnificent, and it really goes. It gives away a litre in engine capacity to the GTS Commodores, of which there will be one less at Canberra due to the theft of the championship leading car of Philip Pilates. He still hasn't got it back, and indeed I doubt if he ever will. And while he is building a replacement car in Melbourne at the workshops of Frank Lowndes, he'll be driving Philip Kirkin's Mazda RX-7, which might itself be a reasonably handy thing. I think Canberra is a wide-open race. If something like the Mustang or a well-driven GTS can get out in front, the track is so narrow. If somebody has qualified well and manages to be pretty well up the front of the grid in the race, so it's going to be pretty hard to get past one of those big cars. But my money has to be on one of the four-wheel drive turbos, I think, either the Evo 5s or Evo 6s. We've got Bob Hughes in there in an Evo 6. We've got the current champion, Mark King, in an Evo 5, which is superbly developed, and he won both races at Canberra last year. And we have some very strong Subaru competitors in Wayne Boatwright, who is in his second season, and the newcomer, Brett Peters, who is... no stranger to motor racing, having something like a 20-year career in supercars, sports cars, Formula Ford, and various other categories. He told me that he's loving GTP. He said that there's none of the stress and strain of being a supercar driver, but a tremendous amount of fun, and he won one of the races at Wakefield Park a few weeks ago. So my money's got to be on either, I think, Peters or Mark King.
Well, we look forward to catching up with you whilst you are in Canberra for two great events, the Nations Cup and the GT Performance, both headlining the GMC 400 this year. There's no doubt about that. And well, Chris, with 4 hours of coverage, we know that we will be looking forward to speaking to you and all the pro car drivers. Just finally, of course, congratulations to Ross Palmer, Peter Floyd and Mara Gudry, who did take a class win over there at the Spa 24 Hour.
Actually, I have to correct you. They didn't manage a class win in the end. They managed to come fourth, having taken the class pole, but they dropped back through the field in the late hours of the 24-hour race. But they were 49th outright out of 210 starters, so that was a terrific result. They were in a German-run M3 BMW. The boys did pretty well. Craig, in closing, first thing I want to say that it'll be a delight to be back in the hometown of Triple S FM. To come down to your patch for a while and let your listeners and come and see us in the paddock and come and watch us at the races. But if they would also like to meet our drivers and see our cars close up, please come along to Queen Bee and to Crawford Street, Queen Bee in the main street from 5:30 on Thursday night, where there is a major promotion that will feature Nations Cup cars, GTB cars and Formula Holden cars, in other words, all the support categories of the GMC 400. A special event laid on by GMC 400 and by the Queanbeyan City Council, and everybody will be welcome.
All right, and what time was that again? About 5:30?
That'll be from 5:30 on Thursday night until around 7 p.m.
All right, well, we look forward to that one as well, and, of course, to see all the cars out on the track. It's going to be an exciting weekend of racing, and Chris Nixon, I hope you bring the heaters down from Queensland with you.
I'm waiting for them down there. I hope you've got the fires burning.
And, of course, we are looking forward to next weekend. I know I have said that the highlight will be the GTP Nations Cup and GT Performance categories, and I think you two would like to take me up on that, I'm sure.
Well, I think the GTP and Nations Cup will provide some excellent racing. We were discussing off-air before that they provided the bulk of the real entertainment, therefore the crashes. Yeah, some quite spectacular things there, particularly one Commodore coming up and over, which was quite fun to watch. But, of course, the what most people are there to see is the V8 supercars and some interesting issues that they're facing with the making changes ready for this year. Some of the little bugbears that the teams would like addressed are things like to get into the paddock area, there are too many trees and they can't get their trucks in. And, of course, there's also the issue about all of the autumn leaves on the track clogging up radiators and things like that, and the very great fear that the cars will overheat, which is interesting because every time these people are interviewed, they're complaining that it's going to be cold, but secretly they're worried about overheating.
Well, it just goes to show that there's always some sort of problem with every track you go to. Whether they're complaining that Darwin was too hot in the cars, and the cars were overheating. Actually, it shouldn't be a problem for Dick Johnson's team this time around. They had a problem there with some overheating problems there for both of their cars. Hopefully they won't have them here in Canberra. And the drivers will keep their cool in the car compared to a lot of other places around the place.
Yes, that's right. And, of course, they have been making a few changes to the track. People who have done the sly lap in the last week or so have seen them quite busy widening the road in many spots. The concrete barriers are up on the gutter rather than down on the track itself. So sort of bit by bit, here and there, they've made the track a bit wider, a bit more open, so hopefully that will translate into better racing, but also a better spectacle for people who pay and get in with a general admission ticket. I know last year general admission didn't provide excellent viewing, except for around the back of Old Parliament House, where there was a little bit of a grassy rise, and that was a very popular spot. Also, I think the main merchandising area from last year, they're going to move the big tents away and allow many more people to sit there on the grass and enjoy one of the other good spectator spots for the general admission ticket holder.
And of course, last year one of the problems was the speed bowl, as they describe it, which is the curved section of track that is angled and banked that runs under the Commonwealth Avenue Bridge past the National Library there. That has been quite extensively resurfaced to smooth a lot of those bumps out, and a few other places they've been doing a bit of work smoothing things out. I've noticed they've also put in new tarmac from basically the back of Old Parliament House down past the archives to Kings Avenue. Very, very smooth, very, very grippy. Definitely improvements there for the racing this next weekend.
Yeah, the Formula Holdens last year were particularly struggling on the bumpiness under the under the bridge and everything like that, you could hear them scraping and bottoming out. They were really struggling. But I think when it really comes to the main event races, Colin, any chance of a prediction? Are you bold enough to take a punt with, I think, ACT, TAB have got running a pool or two on the outcome of the race? Are you bold enough to wager some money?
Nope.
That's right. Your qualifying speed will set you up quite nicely for the first race, the Saturday race, particularly if you're good at the one-lap sprint. They're having a top 15 shootout. But, of course, Sunday morning in the reverse grid, that really makes this a lucky dip, a real lottery, whether you can get through that reverse grid race, make up a few positions. And thankfully, they're not adopting the Konica rules, where the results of race two, the reverse grid, the sole issue that determines the starting for race three. Race three, I understand, will be based on the results of the two races. So if you do well in race one, you might be handicapped too badly for the final deciding race. And I think that's important because that will prevent people from sandbagging too much in race one, because I think that would be a real issue.
Yeah, and of course, race three, of course, you've got two pit stops, one for fuel, one for tyres. Again, the windows where drivers can come in for both of those stops and the opportunities that arise if there's a safety car or not a safety car, if somebody puts it in the wall. So there's so many variables that can come and throw what looks to be a reasonable position for somebody with track position and track speed can go out the window by just a bad call in terms of when they pit.
Yes, also on the pit strategy, we understand that the pit lane speed limit will be 40 kilometres. It's a very small, tight area. So that's good. That means that the race fans who like to time the lap that the pit stop is on, they'll be able to do that with a calendar.
Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of things they'll be able to do. We'll move to other touring car racing overseas. It was a Saturday night meeting for the British Touring Car Championship yesterday, and they were running at Silverstone. And it was a night meeting where Vauxhall man Ivan Muller was the pole sitter for the two races. But as it was his teammate Jason Plater who ended up being the winner in both the sprint race and the feature race. In the sprint race, it was Plato in the Vauxhall Astra Coupe, the factory team car from Ivan Muller. Then it was James Thompson and Phil Bennett in the two export Vauxhalls. Then Dan Eves, Steve Soper in the two Peugeot 406s, running out the sixth. Kurt Luby in the Lexus finishing seventh. Simon Harrison in Peugeot 306 taking out the top of the production car class from another two Peugeots, those of Roger Moen and Paul O'Neill. In the feature race, it was a bit different. Again, they got the pit stops there, which turned things around, and it was Jason Plater was the winner from Phil Bennett in the export Vauxhall Astra Coupe. Ivan Muller finished down in third, and James Thompson fourth, Kurt Luby fifth, Steve Soper sixth, Lexus getting faster every meeting, and Tim Harvey, who is out there in the Alfa Romeo, he apparently had problems with his engine, which saw him sort of out of contention. So a couple of wins there for Jason Plater, and actually he's tightened up the championship with now Muller leading the championship on 108 points, Plato second on 99, Thompson third on 89, Bennett fourth on 66, so the top four places held by Vauxhall. And that is on top of them receiving an additional weight penalty of an additional 30 kilos. So they're running with 60 kilos weight penalty on those Vauxhall Astras. MG have announced that they're going to be back fairly soon, so that'll hopefully introduce some extra competition into the British Touring Car Championship.
We can almost smell the fumes. Only a few days away, we've got the big one in town, the GMC 400, and we've got the Nations Cup. We've got all the big cars, small cars, but they're all quick in town this weekend, including Mark Williamson Racing bringing a team again this year. Went really well last year in the Porsche GT3.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin.
This year, I'm very, very excited because you're going to be running a car that is unlike any other that will be in Canberra for this week. Tell us all about the Little Lotus.
That's right. We've had a little bit of a late start to the season, Kevin. The car was imported into Australia only a month ago, therefore missing the first couple of events. But it's the car is a Lotus Elise Sport 200, which may not mean a lot to people in terms of the numbers there, but the car is a factory-built car from Lotus in the UK, built for a one-make series in the UK. And one of the really great things about this car is it is a factory-built race car, and all the little bits and pieces that you expect to have to do to a race car when you actually build it are already done to it. So it's a great little thing, and one of only two in the country, one of only 35 in the world at the moment. So yeah, quite an exclusive little thing, and certainly the only one that will be seen on the streets of Canberra.
What a zippy little package, Mark. You mentioned the fact that it's already more or less been built for race specifications, but when it did arrive in the country, you would have had to modify it in some way, surely?
Yes, a little bit, Kevin. We've had to do one or two things within the regulations of Nations Cup. We're allowed to make some modifications to the engine management system, and we've fitted a MoTeC engine management system, which will allow us to extract a little more horsepower and also allow us to tune the car pretty much infinitely to the circuit, and we'll be tuning the car there on the weekend through the laptop as we're going over the weekend, and also some modifications to suspension and the handling component and exhaust and a few other things to try and extract just a little bit more performance from the car.
So why the change this year, Mark? I mean, you had reasonable success with the Porsche last year, and why the change to something completely different?
Well, I guess we decided, I took a decision probably about last July or August that I really wanted to, A, continue in Nations Cup because I believe it's a fantastic formula, a lot of very, very exciting cars, great from a sponsorship point of view and also a profile point of view from a driver, but the fact that there are about 7 or 8 Porsche GT3s out there, to me, is a little bit of a negative in terms of differentiation as far as sponsorship benefits go and also my profile. We decided to go something different. We chose the Lotus for a lot of reasons. I believe, ultimately, the package involved with the Lotus is going to be very, very competitive, although just at the moment we'll be down on horsepower fairly significantly, although I think the car will be quite suited to the twisty nature of the circuit. But we decided to make a change, go for Lotus, go for something different. I've had quite a long association with Lotus, and I have 2 other little Lotus releases that we use for all our corporate entertainment days through our track time company. And they're just an enormously fun car to drive, even though the Porsche was a good thing. And we had a win there last year at Canberra, and also a second in the two races there. So Canberra was good to us last year. I'm hoping this year will be equally as good to us in the Lotus.
Mark, tell us about the material of which the car is made. It's a much lighter material than normal. It's a carbon fibre type composition, which is incredibly strong, but it's going to be a hell of a lot lighter than anything else in the race.
Yeah, that's right, Kevin. The car is essentially, we certainly don't have any rust problems because there's basically very little steel in the thing. The chassis is all aluminium honeycomb composite material. It's all actually bonded together and effectively glued together. It's like essentially a monocoque, as you would see in a single seater type of car. And the bodywork is all carbon fibre, so therefore very lightweight. And we have the ability to be able to manufacture all our own components here in terms of bodywork and so forth throughout the year, which I hope will minimise any costs as far as damage go. I had a little bit of, a fairly significant amount of panel damage down at Canberra last year in the Porsche, and I was on the end of a fairly big panel beating bill after that. So our bodywork costs this year will be less, even though the material is quite exotic. Porsche panels tend to be pretty expensive.
Okay, so this little Lotus, lighter, how much lighter than, say, the Porsches, the Lamborghinis, things like that?
Well, the Porsche came in with driver at 1355 kilos. The Lamborghini, I understand, last year anyway, was about 1500 kilos. This year, I think, has been pared back a little bit. The Lotus at the moment, to be honest, I don't have a definitive weight for this actual little car because we're just getting it on the scales to set the car up at the moment, but the car itself should weigh around about the 700 kilo mark, and then I'm on a diet to try and get the driver down a little bit further as well. So all in all, it's certainly a very lightweight package, and the power to weight ratio of the car is really, really right in there with some of the other Nations Cup cars.
So does the lighter car give you some advantage over the heavier cars?
It does give you quite a few advantages in terms of brake wear, tyre wear. The Porsche was pretty hard on tyres. By sort of race three of a Nations Cup event, you'd be struggling with rear tyres and rear grip or having to throw more tyres at the car and therefore costing more money. We really believe, for the tests we've done and with information we have from the UK, that the tyre package we have will pretty much be very, very good for the whole three events of Nations Cup. For instance, if we were to do a long distance event like Bathurst or something like that, we would easily do it on one set of brake pads without having to change any pads, and the tyre consumption would be very, very low. So from that point of view, there's quite a lot of benefits to running the lighter car, apart from the fact that in terms of braking and cornering, the car is far superior to the Porsche, and last year, I guess we'd have to say the Porsche was probably the best thing in terms of braking and cornering out there as far as Nations Cup goes. And I think our little car this year is a fairly significant step forward from the Porsche that we had last year.
I'm here this morning speaking with Mark Williamson from Mark Williamson Racing, who's bringing down a snazzy little Lotus for the Nations Cup part of the big GMC 400 weekend in Canberra this weekend. Now, Mark, the car, not having been in the country very long, and this is going to be its maiden outing, if you like, what are your realistic expectations about what's ahead?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is the, I guess, the christening for the car in this country. Yeah, look, hard to say, Kevin. I mean, our outcome that we would like to see from Canberra is, I guess because of the nature of the event, it's very high profile. We want to give our sponsors some good exposure, particularly Alcatel, Quadtel, and Laissez-Faire Catering. We were a catering professional company who were really targeting towards motorsport. We want to be able to give them some good exposure, get the best result we can. As I mentioned earlier, I had a win and a second in the Porsche GT3 there last year. This year, look, I'd be very surprised to come away with anywhere near the same results, to be honest. If I can get the thing into the top five or six, I'll be quite happy. And my hope, sort of bring it back in one piece at the end of the weekend.
So is this a long-term plan, Mark, to stay with the Lotus and a couple of races this year and then stay with it for, you know, a good few years?
Yeah, it certainly is, Kevin. That's been one of the hard things, gearing up to run two Porsche GT3s last year, then ditching them at the end of the year and gearing up again this year. The time and costs involved with changing cars is huge, and we certainly plan on sticking with the Lotus Elise for the next year's season, 2002. We're developing some technologies with the engine that will allow us to extract a fair bit more power from the car, which I think will give us the horsepower we need to be actually a front-running car next year, and I believe we'll have a car in 2002 that we'll be able to chase the championship for. Therefore, we're concentrating on that development this year and just choosing some of the higher profile events to come out at, and some of the events where I think the little Lotus will be suited towards, and as I said, the tight, twisty nature of the Canberra circuit should certainly suit our car.
And you're also going Eastern Creek with this car?
We'll be running at Eastern Creek a little later in the year. You might look at Eastern Creek and think, well, there's an awful long straight there. We're going to get blown away down there. You're right, we probably will get passed by about 15 cars every time we come down the straight. But when we get to the rest of the circuit, and the rest of Eastern Creek is pretty much corners and constant radius bends, because we have some pretty big wings on this car, our actual corner speeds, we've already looked at our data, are quite a bit higher than the GT3. And we believe we'll be able to certainly have some benefits on some of the other cars around the rest of that circuit, and overall I think we'll be reasonably competitive. Again, I don't think we'll be in a position to go and beat the Diablo. However, I'd like to think we can place in maybe top four, top five, and maybe even a podium.
This is a magnificent looking motor car. I've seen the photos of it without the appropriate signs and that on it, but it's a lovely little black number, and it's going to stand out, isn't it, next weekend?
Yeah, it certainly will. I hope so. It's a car that will, I think, attract a lot of attention every time we've been on the circuit just testing recently. Literally has people calling all over it because it is something different, and most people don't even recognise what it is. Mm. But it's a really good looking little car, and we believe it'll attract a lot of attention. We're finalising all our signages now for the event and our graphics and so forth. So I think we'll have a very good looking car that will certainly attract a lot of attention.
What number will it be? 80, isn't it?
Yeah, it's number 80. In fact, that's the number I ran last year at the Porsches, the number was, I think, reasonably lucky for me last year, so I'll stick with that this year. So, yeah, we'll have to look out for number 80 out there.
What is the deal behind the numbers, Mark, on a totally different matter? Is that something you pick? Do you do a bit of superstition with that, or do you get allocated a number? How does it work?
Yeah, I guess apart from the person who wins the championship, which in the last year's case was Jim Richards, and he's got number one on his car, obviously, the rest of the numbers pretty much are kind of up for grabs. It doesn't necessarily fall in the way that the way you finished the championship last year. In that last year, I finished the championship in sixth position with the Porsche. But we looked at the numbers, and I've got a couple of Chinese friends and spoke to them about some of the luckier numbers that I should be picking, and they came up with number 80, and we're sort of going to stick with that for this year anyway.
So I think I saw at Bathurst last year, there was in the V8 supercars, there was a car with number 666. On it. Did you see that one?
Yeah, well, in fact, that was That car, in fact, was the Lamborghini Diablo in the Nations Cup category that of Paul Stoker that I'm competing against. And I guess with a name like a car called the Diablo, the 666 was a sort of kind of a relevant number for those guys to pick. So, yeah, a little bit of marketing happening there, I think.
So you can pick any number you like, really. You could pick 940 just for the sake of it.
Yeah, I think you can. In fact, I think he had to, from memory, I think he had to seek some special permission to run three numbers. You usually don't see anyone running a car with three numerals on it. So, within the realms of realism, you can pretty much pick what you want.
Well, the GMC 400, the Nations Cup, the whole weekend in Canberra. Tell us about it last year, Mark. It was the first. Did you think it went off pretty well?
Look, I thought it was an excellent event last year, Kevin. The circuit, I found, was a huge amount of fun. I really, really enjoyed driving around the circuit, for instance, in qualifying and in practice. And I think most people would have agreed the actual to actually race on the circuit was quite difficult because of the tight, twisty nature of it. I understand the circuit's been modified in a few places this year and widened in a few of the key areas, and I think that will improve the racing tremendously. Naturally, it's a very, very tight and very narrow circuit, and it just provides very spectacular racing. And from a driver's point of view, it's an awful lot of fun to drive around. I mean, I had a grin from ear to ear last year when I was just practicing on the circuit. Having said that, very, very daunting, and no place to make a mistake. You can't even really afford to have a spin in your car there because there is just no room at all to go off the road. And if you do, you're basically into a concrete wall. And I've raced on, I guess, quite a few street circuits now in Australia and seen a lot of them overseas as well. And I've never seen anything, probably anything as daunting as Canberra, actually.
You have to be, obviously, with the concrete, very unforgiving. You have to be a little more conservative, do you, in places?
I guess we probably, like a week out from the race, we're probably all saying that to ourselves, but I guess everyone knows when you pull the helmet on and the kind of the green light goes on that you forget all that straight away anyway, and you just kind of get stuck in. And I don't think anyone, certainly anyone who's racing at a serious level, can afford to be conservative because you're just not going to get the results that you need if that happens. So, look, you've really just got to attack the circuit anyway and, rely a little bit on the skills to try and keep it off the wall.
And then deal with the drama if it happens afterwards.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it's going to be exciting stuff, isn't it? Next weekend we're going to have the Lotus number 80, Mark Williamson Racing, which will be the most attractive-looking car in the race for the Nations Cup. And Triple S proud to be associated with the car. We can't wait to see it. And Mark, look, good luck with all the testing and everything else. We look forward to seeing the package in town this week. And make sure, if you are going to the races on the weekend, look out for the little black Lotus because it'll be a beauty and it'll be around for a while to come. And Mark Williamson, good luck with it. Thank you for talking to us.
Thanks very much, Kevin.
Of course, you can catch Kevin Wolfe each and every weekday morning here on the Good Sports Triple S FM. But finally now, our hectic weekend of Memorial Weekend with Grand Prix, Indy 500 and the Coca-Cola 600 all being run. We now turn around and say, well, we're going to have a long weekend, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, and then a Monday to recover. It can't get any better than that.
Well, like some other radio program says, that too much is not enough. You know, too much motorsport is never enough, is it, fellas?
Well, not next weekend. We've got some good racing coming up. Now, the GMC 400, the V8s, that should be quite interesting. I'm looking forward to the GT GT Performance and Nations Cup categories with things like that Mustang, the Ferraris, etc. And also, it's going to be interesting to see the Dodge Vipers back with their Le Mans body kits. I reckon those things are going to look ferocious, and they always sound ferocious on the track as well. Formula Holden, some great racing. Now they've got a few locals getting back into it as well. So, now looking forward to a good weekend's racing.
It is going to be a lot of fun. I hope you can join us on Inside Motorsport. Of course, we have got Sunday Morning Sport here on the Good Sport Sunday morning, which will have all the news from the GMC 400 day number one, where the first 25 kilometres of the V8s will be run, and of course one of the GT Performance and Nations Cup events will be also run. So we'll have results from that on Sunday Morning Sport, and then of course Inside Motorsport with all the news and stories from what has been, what will be, and will be a wrap up of a busy weekend. Fellas, thanks very much, and we all, I know, look forward to bring over 4 hours of radio coverage to the to everyone on the GMC 400.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, it will be a great weekend.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.